From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, the venerable Hollywood trade paper Variety is up for sale. What will a new owner mean to the business? We'll have a lively conversation with blogger extraordinaire Nikki Fink and Uber publicist Howard Bragman. Plus, which prognosticators predicted the Oscars with paramount precision? We'll find out. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Go nowhere. It's The Business from NPR. By now, you've probably heard the news that New Line Cinema has flatlined, at least in the eyes of Warner Brothers CEO Jeff Bukas. In a statement released to the press last week, Bukas announced that Bob Shea's struggling 40-year-old indie, known as the house that Freddy Krueger built, would be rolled up into the Warner Brothers behemoth. Quote, "We are moving quickly to improve our business performance and financial returns," Bukas said, which will translate as, "Either greenlight Nightmare on Elm Street 17 or get out." New Line founder Bob Shea and President Michael Lynn chose to get out. Elsewhere, the trial of Anthony Pelicano, the disgraced private investigator accused of tapping the phones of various moguls and stars, is picking up steam. Radar Online reported last week that plea deal talks with retired police sergeant Mark Arneson and former telephone company employee Ray Turner have broken down. They've both been accused of being involved in wiretaps and will stand trial with Pelicano beginning next week. Sylvester Stallone, whose phone was tapped, said last week that he wouldn't mind testifying in the case. Just back from promoting Rambo, Sly told the Associated Press,
"Why not? I don't want to be left out."
Meanwhile, the half-life for the dramedy Quarter Life has been determined. Not long. The NBC show was noteworthy because its creators took it back from ABC and originally aired it on the web. But the broadcast premiere of Quarter Life marked NBC's worst performance in the 10 o'clock hour in the last 17 years. It managed only a measly 1.3 rating in the 18 to 49 demo, shedding some 5 million viewers from its lead-in, The Biggest Loser, which is going to have to change its name if Quarter Life sticks around much longer. And finally, the Entertainment Gifting Company has come out with its top 50 gift list. Attention assistants, you can now conveniently order something for all your boss's obsequious gifting needs straight from their website. Among the offerings, $65 monogram slippers, $135 gas pump liquor dispenser, and a $360 Sky Caddy golf course GPS navigator. Perennial Hollywood favorites oddly absent from their site include a gram of fine Peruvian flake, 35 minutes with a transsexual prostitute, and floor seats to a Lakers game. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later in the show, we handicap the Oscar handicappers. But next, Hollywood and the Fourth Estate. And we're not talking vacation. There's always been three prongs to press coverage of the business of show business. There's the trades, the mainstream press, and the rumor mill. The trades, which are primarily supported by ads from the studios and networks they cover, essentially report the comings and goings of day-to-day show business. The mainstream press seems to get the big and big-picture stories, especially the ones critical of the industry. And the rumor mill repeats the stories neither one can or will. But in the last decade, there have been three major changes to business as usual. For one thing, Variety and The Hollywood Reporter were snapped up by media conglomerates. For another, the public seems to have developed a real appetite for show business business news. And finally, and by far the most important, the gossip mill went online and more serious Hollywood journalists followed. It used to be you woke up in your Hollywood Hills home, put on your smoking jacket, had a cup of coffee, and read Variety. Now people are more likely to go to their computer and check a news aggregator, like Hollywood Wiretap or Defamer. We thought that the recent news that the 103-year-old Hollywood paper of record Variety was up for sale was a great reason to talk about the state of the Hollywood newsroom. So, we called up reporter and blogger Nikki Fink and PR guru Howard Bragman. Nikki is Hollywood business columnist for the LA Weekly and the owner and editor of DeadlineHollywoodDaily.com. Howard Bragman founded the venerable Bragman Nyman Caffarelli public relations firm in 1989. He went on to found the aptly titled PR firm 15 Minutes in 2005. Howard, Nikki, welcome to The Business. There is some talk that Nielsen, which owns The Hollywood Reporter, might buy Variety, which is owned by Reed Business, and close The Reporter. Now, we have no inside knowledge of this deal coming to pass or not, but we thought it'd be fun to ask the question to people who work knee-deep in the media muck. If that was to happen, What do you think the effect would be on the town? So, Nikki Fink, we'll give it to you first. What do you think?
First of all, Variety is quite different from The Hollywood Reporter. As bad as Variety is, The Hollywood Reporter is way worse.
Okay.
And by that I mean, if you think Variety toes the line with the moguls, I mean, The Hollywood Reporter is even more desperate and toes the line even more desperately.
And how do you mean? Give me an example of that, because that's a pretty incendiary statement to make.
Well, I have lots of evidence to back it up. I mean, I was chronicling during the writer's strike how Variety would basically fabricate information. They would have headlines that were not borne out by the stories, and they would even have stories that were not borne out by the facts. I mean, they reported so much that wasn't true, that all the moguls were hiring British writers and were going to be bringing them in. Well, that wasn't true, because in fact, the British Writers Guild definitely sided with the Hollywood Writers Guild and said specifically that our members would not come in and would not start doing the work that the American writers wouldn't.
So you feel like it gets used to spread disinformation by the moguls.
Exactly. And what you also have is this game that is played perpetually. You know, if a studio head calls Peter Bard at Variety and says, look, you know, this is going to be really awkward for us if you print this information. Do you mind holding it for 15 days? Can you imagine, especially about Hollywood matters, nobody in a mainstream newspaper would ever do that.
No, I disagree. I disagree.
All right, Howard, I was going to pull you in here and say, let's save poor Peter Bard from this pummeling.
No, I cut deals with mainstream newspapers all the time, and that's what it means to be on a beat. And a beat journalist always has this issue, am I too friendly with my sources? And it's about relationships. It can be about quid pro quo. And I got to believe, Nikki, that there are even times when somebody will ask you to hold something that's a good relationship, and you will give them a little more gentleness than you would somebody you don't know from Adam. And I say thank God there's two trades in this town, since we only have one daily newspaper, and they do cover things differently. But, you know, I give Peter Bard a lot of credit. He has the relationships with the moguls, and frankly, The Hollywood Reporter hasn't had a strong publisher in the last few years, as we know. And Jerry Byrne's a strong guy, and he knows the industry. They have, you know, they brought in somebody from Pen and Ink or Chemical Quarterly. You did a good job there, so now you're going to run The Hollywood Reporter, which, you know, Peter is of this town and part of the fabric of this town. And I think the Reporter is finally realizing they can't just bring somebody from another trade. But deals are cut all the time. Come on, let's not be naive about this.
Howard is right in many ways, although wrong about me. I mean, I just very gently say to people, look, I've got to report this. You've got to understand this is what I do. Now, tell me what you want to tell me to try and mitigate it, but I'm still going to report it. But Peter is not doing anything that hasn't been done for a long time at the trade. He's continuing a very old and honored trade tradition. The difference is that we're talking mainly about showbiz coverage in general. I do agree that what the trades do is not quite as different from what the Los Angeles Times does or the New York Times, but there are very big differences. I mean, when Claudia Eller broke the story about the HBO head who was pushed out and the scandal surrounding it, I mean, that was a story you know that HBO was trying desperately to sit on.
You're talking about the
Chris Albrecht.
The drunken brawl that Chris Albrecht allegedly had with his girlfriend outside of the MGM Grand was about 6 months ago now.
And the story there wasn't so much that. It was what had been covered up at HBO years earlier concerning Chris Albrecht and his relationships with the women who worked for him. And all that started coming out. Both Claudia and I were tipped on this, and her lawyers were way better than mine, and she broke the story. You know, there's a whole range of information that the trades won't do, which is where mainstream journalism comes in. But let's face it, I mean, most showbiz coverage is fan coverage, it's soft, it's sitting down with a star, it's sitting down with a director, you're trying to understand, you know, the background of a movie or a TV show or decisions. There's not a whole lot of gotcha journalism. This is where the internet comes in.
Right. And I have to say, the trades have changed. When I started out, when I came to this town a couple decades ago, it was Claudia at Variety and Andrea King at The Reporter, and they would call you, and they knew everything before it happened. If you didn't give it to one or the other, you would be in trouble, and you would be on the bad list with them. And that's really gone, but the value the trades serve for this town is that they're trades, and we always try and compare them to the LA Times and the New York Times, but you know what? They have a different job to do, and that is, who's changing agencies? What are the corporate changes going on? Who got cast in these parts? Stuff that's really not important enough for Nikki or the LA Times to cover unless it's an AA star. And I hope that continues, because we're holding them to a standard that I don't think is appropriate for a trade publication. And we have to understand that we're talking about a publication with a circulation of maybe 50,000 in a really good week. And I think they do their job for the most part, you know, but it certainly isn't as vicious as it used to be in the old days. And I think a lot of it is they've had a lot of turnover in the depths there. A lot of the good journalists have gone on to other places.
How has the web, and especially bloggers like Nikki, changed the game, especially in a town that just loves gossip?
You know what? Lover or hater, Nikki is a journalist. And you can have a realistic journalistic argument with Nikki, who has worked at mainstream journalistic publications, and it would potentially win based on journalistic merit. I can't have that discussion with Perez Hilton. I can't have that discussion with 99% of the other bloggers. Harvey, for the most part, is a mainstream journalist.
You're talking about Harvey Levin,
Harvey
the head
Levin
of TMZ.com.
You know, they get snarky, but at the same time, Harvey's a journalist, too, and I'd much rather deal with somebody who has journalistic training and standards than somebody who doesn't. That's where it comes in. You know, what is news? What isn't news? And that's the part where my life gets miserable, because suddenly the sister of a celebrity becomes news, or something that really doesn't meet the journalistic criteria for a public person. And that's the stuff I'm fighting, and I can't argue a journalistic argument because they don't get it. And I have a journalism degree, and I've worked in journalism, and I respect journalists, and I respect the bloggers that do have that background. Those that don't, I generally try not to deal with, because I can't win in those cases.
See, it used to be all very controlled. I mean, you had an announcement. You gave it to Variety. You also gave it to the mainstream press. But because they have been lagging in really bringing up their blogging to a point where they are covering the business almost 24 hours, it leaves a lot of territory open to people like myself. And also, we can become niche information people, where we can zero in on aspects of the business. We don't have to cover everything for everybody.
Right, and I want to add two things. One is, the problem with print editions is the same thing the problem with newspaper has. Nikki Fink can report something, and let me tell you, the people in my office, essentially 35 and under, find it out within 3 minutes, and I get a continuous stream of emails from my own personal aggregators, and I think a lot of people aggregate that way themselves now, as opposed to reading the daily papers. And I think that's crucial, that the habit of getting up, reading the paper, is something that's kind of a throwback these days. And the other part of it is, publicists really are upset about the bigger issue. I've heard a lot of publicists say, I hate the internet. Well, guess what, moron? The internet is here. And publicists in this town are so used to control in the Pat Kingsley model, and they don't understand now it's not about control. Our job is to manage, not control.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Hollywood PR guru Howard Bragman and reporter and blogger Nikki Fink about Hollywood and its convoluted relationship with the press. Since who pays for the ads in a publication seems to be so important to this conversation, we'd like to note that Nikki assures us that she's a salaried contract employee of the LA Weekly and has no control over the ads on her site, nor does she receive a cut of the revenue they generate. Let me ask you, Howard, first, if you would, explain the difference between pitching a story to Variety and pitching one to the New York Times.
You know, Variety doesn't do much feature. The New York Times, it's much easier to do a feature and to get a bigger piece and say, this celebrity, this company, this agency, this trend is really important because, and I can write the old-fashioned pitch letter. With Variety, it's usually picking up a phone and saying, listen, here's what's going on. What can we do with this? And generally they'll say, hey, we'll hold it for best placement. It might get in Wednesday, it may get in Thursday, but we'll make sure it gets in by the weekend. I think one of the things that the trades have lost, because the advertising is not as solid as it was the ability to do more feature and trend stories. And sometimes you can get them in the weekly version, and that's good. But the New York Times and the LA Times are wonderful places to pitch much bigger trend stories. And they still listen, and I like to think that they're open to a lot more ideas. And I've been pleasantly surprised lately.
What about someone like Nikki? Or do you even pitch Nikki?
Do I pitch her? Sometimes I feed her little things. Sometimes, you know, Nikki and I have a relationship. I don't want to go into it because I don't, you know, that's sort of inside baseball. But I will tell you, Nikki and I have a very productive relationship.
Nikki, let's talk.
I guarantee everybody who emails me and phones me or feeds me anything, I always guarantee them anonymity unless they choose to want to go public.
But let's talk about the process.
Okay, let's talk about the process. I have reporters at the trades, at the mainstream papers, who will tip me to things because they say, I can never get this in the paper.
You're kidding.
No, of course. I mean, a day doesn't go by that I don't get an email from various reporters at I'd say at least 30 different publications saying, I can't get it in the paper, or I'm not even going to bother to try, or I know you'll have fun with this. And I also get these comments like, I wish I could have the freedom you did. Because it comes down to, a lot of this is media consolidation. You've gotten to the point where so many of the industry CEOs who we're covering are also owners of infotainment. And there is such a symbiotic relationship, whether it's advertising, whether it's, somebody works for Entertainment Weekly, which is owned by Time Warner, and everybody likes to say that they're separate, but of course they're not.
The fact that their advertising comes primarily from the studios and the networks, were you suggesting that that prevents them from aggressively covering the stories that would put them in competition with the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and so on?
Of course. Of course it does. The trades don't, and Howard made a very good point that it used to be different. The trades in the modern day are not breaking stories about the Hollywood CEOs or their companies that those CEOs or companies don't want broken. I mean, this is basically the unwritten rule. And it's certainly worked for the trades, and I think if they were to get too aggressive, it would be very difficult.
Well, Howard, let me ask you, why do the New York Times and the LA Times sometimes and the Wall Street Journal and even Kim Masters at NPR, why do they tend to get the big Hollywood news stories?
Well, if I'm a publicist and I want to break a big news story, do I want to go to 50,000 people in Variety, or do I want to go to somewhere in the millions at the LA Times or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal? Of course I do, because it's better in the end for the people who are breaking the story. And the trades, by responsibility and definition, are going to pick it up secondarily. If I give it to Variety first, sometimes the New York Times will overlook it or give it short shrift, and I'd rather have a front page business or art story in the New York Times than I would a front page Variety story, in a lot of cases. So it's relatively simple.
In a moment, more with blogger Nikki Fink and PR guru Howard Bragman about Hollywood and the press that covers it. You're listening to The Business from NPR. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. News broke recently that Variety, the 103-year-old Hollywood newspaper of record, was up for sale. So, it seemed like a good time to talk about the strange and wondrous relationship between show business and the press that covers it. We're talking to Howard Bragman and Nikki Fink. Howard founded the venerable public relations firm Bragman, Nyman, Caffarelli in 1989. He went on to found the aptly titled PR firm 15 Minutes in 2005. Nikki is Hollywood business columnist for the LA Weekly and the owner and editor of DeadlineHollywoodDaily.com. Nikki, you own the writer's strike story. How did you get the lock on it, and why didn't or couldn't the trade papers or the general interest newspapers?
Well, I think the legacy of the writer's strike in terms of journalism is that, for whatever reason, and maybe it's because they knew who their advertisers were, the mainstream press, the trades, they took a very anti-writer slant. And I tried to really just basically say, okay, you know, when someone's acting like a jerk here, I'm going to call them out for it. I think people recognized that I was trying to be truthful.
I think both sides made a lot of tactical errors, and I don't even think it's whether the trades did a good or not good job. I think it's the perception that they're so tied in with the corporations that people just naturally gravitated towards Nikki. I think the trades just have to understand that if that's where your bread is buttered, people are going to assume that that's the side you're going to take.
Well, here's something I'd like to ask, and I think the world would love to know, Nikki. Who talks to you?
Everyone.
Everyone. And would you say the bulk of your information comes from abused and underpaid assistants who have an axe to grind, or
I want to answer that. I think that's really naive. I think there's powerful people in this town who have a point of view they want to get out, and you can call or email Nikki Fink. She will confirm it. Within 15 minutes, your story is online, and everybody in town has seen it. Where else can you do that?
Nikki?
There was a great line in Postcards from the Edge by Carrie Fisher. Instant gratification is not fast enough. You know, sometimes I'm amazed that there aren't more disgruntled assistants or secretaries or whatever who were emailing me things. But I think they're too afraid.
I think that it's safe to say that the interest in the business side of show business outside of Hollywood is at a level that it's never been at before. I want to ask you, Howard, and also Nikki, who you think is capitalized on this, and who's totally missed the boat?
I think the web is growing as a result of insider information. I mean, why am I on TV quoted multiple times each week when 20 years ago my family didn't know what in the hell I did for a living, literally? You know, people understand the concept. They understand the concept of spin. They understand what a publicist is. And it's just taken some time in this town and in this world we live in for people to understand in. They may not understand the difference between an agent and a manager, but you can bet there'll probably be a TV show out there, and I think Entourage is teaching them things like that, too, as we get more into pop culture. We used to shield people. We didn't want them to know how the sausage was made, and now we're showing them. And there's an amazing appetite. You know how often I'm on CNN and they go, okay, you're Britney's publicist or you're Paris's publicist. What are you going to do in this situation and why? And people want to understand just not what the outcome is, but why did you get to that outcome? Why did you make this decision? And was this ultimately the right decision? I had it a lot a couple weeks ago when Lindsay Lohan did her lovely New York Magazine spread.
Nikki, who's doing this right and who's completely out to lunch?
I think in order to do it right, you do have to do it almost 24/7. It takes a huge commitment of time, but you have to have the sources who will get back to you immediately, and more importantly, you have to be right. I mean, people wouldn't be reading me if I weren't accurate. The biggest problem for the Los Angeles Times and the New York Times and even the trades is you don't go through an entire system of copy editors and editors when you put something on the web. You have to sort of stand behind your own information. Now, maybe they could feed stuff to one editor, but again, they would have to have truly dedicated editors who just do an entertainment blog. And so far, like, look at the LA Times. What blogs they've done have been really soft. One thing that Howard said, which is absolutely true, you'd think the stuff would only be interesting to the industry. But let's face it. I mean, every Monday morning, everyone knows what the number one movie is because they've heard about it on TV and radio, and they've read about it in the newspapers. You don't know every Monday morning which sold more, Pepsi or Coke. When I get feedback about my column, it's not just from industry people. I'm told constantly by people sitting in Nebraska and Iowa, you know, I've always wanted an insight into the entertainment business, and I feel reading your column that I'm on the inside.
We got to leave it there. Nikki Fink is the Hollywood business columnist for the LA Weekly and the owner and editor of DeadlineHollywoodDaily.com. Howard Bragman founded the venerable Bragman, Nyman, Caffarelli public relations firm back in 1989. He went on to found the aptly titled PR firm 15 Minutes in 2005. Nikki, Howard, thanks for being on The Business.
Thanks, Claude.
Pleasure.
They may seem like part of a distant past, but the Oscars were just one short week ago. There's certainly a group of people who would like you to forget about the Oscars, and that's the Academy Award prognosticators. These so-called insiders cost working people like you and me millions of dollars in needless Oscar pool losses. So, as a public service, the business producer Matt Holzman decided to look at the precision of these prognosticators, or their lack thereof.
We begin our look at Oscar prognosticators in the online category. May I have the envelope, please? With all the massive resources of America Online, their movie phone site scored a sad 10 out of the 24 possible categories. On the other end of the web spectrum, one Ken Evans of a site called FirstShowing.net named a more impressive 13. Now, many of the big movie sites like IMDb seem to have copped out altogether with user polls instead of expert predictions. So I say even at just 13 right, rock on, Ken Evans, who and wherever you are. In the foreign critic category, I could not find a single English-speaking critic, not from the BBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, or even the Liberian Broadcasting System, that made picks in more than just a few big categories. The Australian Broadcasting Corporation's Ben Davey made 14 picks and got either 10 or 11 correct. The confusion comes from this sentence, quote, Diablo Cody winning Best Original Screenplay makes for a great story. I'd be happy with a less sexy outcome, though, Brad Bird taking it out for Ratatouille, unquote. So I'm not sure who he really picked. It's a bit like parsing a speech from the chief of the Aussie Federal Reserve. But even if he only got 10 right, I'd say that's pretty good for a guy who's 8,000 miles away from Hollywood. Closer to home in the big media category, New York Magazine and Entertainment Weekly tied at just 12 right each, while the LA Times Star Chamber of 32 experts got only 10 of 24 correct. The winner here is arguably the New York Times carpetbagger David Carr, who got 14 right. But he loses points for calling some of the categories, quote, extra credit, and for listing both a costume and a development in costume design category, and getting them both wrong. With 15 picks correct, Michael Musto of The Village Voice seems to be the top prognosticator in the indie media category, or any category for that matter. Small problem, he didn't actually make these picks publicly and claims to have, quote, thrown out the ballots at his house party, unquote. But I believe him, because he went on to tell me that one of his friends in his pool beat him, and that kind of humility is hard to find in the business. So the number one prognosticator in the nation with 16 out of 24 categories correct seems to be some unnamed friend of Michael Musto of The Village Voice. Congratulations. So seriously, what are we saying here? Who should you rely on for next year's pool? Well, if you don't have a loose-lipped friend at Price Waterhouse, paste the Oscar ballot up on a wall and just throw a few darts. You'll probably do just as well as any of the so-called experts. For The Business, I'm Matt Holzman.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio.